Mayfly time is the pinnacle for most brown trout anglers, and we're pleased to announce our next Ireland on the Fly Masterclass is focusing on mayfly tactics with international angler, guide and renowned fly tyer Jackie Mahon.
On Thursday the 25th of April at 8 p.m, Jackie will be discussing how to make the most of the conditions, the best flies and methods to use, as well as giving his tips and insights from a lifetime of experience.
So, to join us for this masterclass on Thursday 25th of April, just go to www.irelandonthefly.com/masterclass. Tickets cost €10 and all attendees will get a copy of Jackie's notes as well as access to the recording of the webinar afterwards.
And stay tuned for our masterclasses throughout 2024, covering salmon, rivers, lochs, streamers, lures, dries, everything to make you a better salmon or trout fly angler, helping you to catch more this year and to learn from the best. For more information, email us on info@irelandonthefly.com.
Well, it was out 2 weeks ago, I had a 9-pound stringer on East Mayo. A couple of days ago, I had a 12-pound springer on the Moy fishery, and this morning I had a 9-pound fish on the Moy fishery. All on the fly, all released. The gods are looking out for me.
Hello and welcome to the Ireland on the Fly podcast about the people and places of fly fishing in Ireland. The trout fishing has certainly picked up the last week or so, with hatches of mayfly on the Irish lochs producing some great fish, and it really feels as if the season is now kicking into gear, including the salmon as well, particularly on the River Moy. It's Ireland's iconic salmon river, with the Ridgepole and Ballina standing out as a special and unique place to land a salmon on the fly. And so to find out more about fishing the river and what to expect for the rest of the season, we're joined by Garrick Rigrock, who is a casting instructor and fishing guide who guides in Ireland, Scotland and around the world, and is also a committee member of the East Mayo Anglers Association. But Tom, before we hear from Garrick, tell me, how has the mayfly fishing been going for you on Corrib?
Man, Dara, how are you? So at the moment we're looking, as we're talking, it's approaching the end of it here on Corrib. It's been a really funny season. It started off very well in early May with some good fishing. And as always is the case, when that happens, you expect, oh, it's going to get better. And sometimes you're through the thick of it and it is the best of it, but you don't realize it at the time, because our human nature is, oh, it's going to get better. So from around the middle of May, it's kind of petered off. The hatches, and at the moment as we're talking, the hatches have really, really got sparser and sparser, and which is unusual for this time of the year, even on Corrib, because normally I would experience good hatches to right to the first week in June. And I still do a lot of mayfly fishing to the first week in June, but this is strange this year. Hatches are fewer and far between, and as a consequence, the fishing gets more difficult, particularly if the conditions aren't good for fly fishing. So at the moment now, we've switched into northerlies and calm with sparse hatches. So it's tough at the moment. Now, you get chances. As I was saying to you earlier there, like, we had our day yesterday, but one of the other boats boated 7. So, you know, that's the way it'll go. So, you know, it's not a complete disaster. I mean, that's the way it is with this lake and any of the Western lakes. You know, you take your chances a lot of the time. The only thing is, we could do with better conditions, particularly with the sparser hatches. But all in all, it was a patchy one.
Has it peaked? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, I would say so. We're on the slippery slope downwards, as they'd say.
Is Sheelan peaking, do you think, now? Have you heard what?
I haven't heard much in Sheelan the last couple of days. The only thing what I've heard is it's, and as we're talking to this about, we're talking to Eamon, they seem to have switched on solely onto the spent now. And that's what seems to be happening now. You know, the green fly fishing and the nymph fishing, which was apparently really good this year. I know Eamon said it, talked to other guys, it's been absolutely fantastic up there. From what I can gather at the moment, it's they've switched mainly onto the black knot, the spent. So I would imagine, like, there's still a bit to go in Sheelan. I haven't been talking to anybody there at the moment. I'm concentrating. I'm fishing the National on Enel this weekend. So sorry to look. So I haven't been, any info I can get is more to do with Loch Enel than Loch Sheelan.
Okay, how's Enel been fishing then?
I can't tell you. Would you switch off the recording? I believe it's tough. From what I can hear, it's tough. But the traditional thing, I don't know if we ever said this, but years ago when the gents could come for a month, the tour would start in Lough Derg, which traditionally was the earliest, then come to Corrib, and then for the end of it, they would switch to Sheelan. So traditionally, you could look that Sheelan was always that bit later than Corrib. So you could say, yeah, there'll still be stuff going on in Sheelan. But with us, I think probably another week, probably see it finishing here. Now, look, I predicted this. I often tell people the first time I worked with Hardys, I was 7 years on the road, and when I stopped guiding when I was on them, and I had to book holidays for the first year, which was great. I couldn't get over actually having days off and getting paid for it. It was, as somebody who was self-employed nearly all my life, it was unreal. But I took 2 weeks off in 2008 for my May flight, and I missed it. Yeah. So I took 1st to the 15th of May, and the May flight came up that year on the 13th or 14th of May. So I'm telling you here now, that'll be it. And what could happen next week, we could get a turn in the weather, and the next thing, you could get another week of a hatch in certain places. You just can't tell.
And you'd say turn of the weather, what are you looking for in terms of the wind? And
Just if it, basically anything that wasn't approaching a heat wave. Okay.
But because, and in fairness, I know everybody's gone, it's beautiful, the weather's here, summer's arrived, and you know, it is great because we had such a crap spring. It's still heat wave weather for May, like.
It is, yeah.
It's early, like, you know, for this kind of heat wave weather, like.
We have a saying in our household. I'm really digressing now. John Watson, he's been coming here since the 50s, right? And anybody saw, I had a post up on Facebook on my fishing page, and there's him with a lovely fish over 4 pounds. John is in his mid-80s now, coming here for a long time. But it was weather like what we're having now, is bright sunshine. And this is back in the 80s. And he had to call out to my folks' house to give something to my dad. And my mother looked out, "Hey, John, how's it going?" "Oh, yeah, how's things?" My mother said, "The sun was splitting the rocks." And he said, "It's a great day, John." And he just went, desperate weather." Right? So that became a sort of a saying in our house, that whenever there was a heat wave, he just went, desperate weather.
So, yeah. Only an angler would be cribbing. Oh,
yeah,
away.
Exactly. But yeah, so look, if you got a bit of cloud, if the temperature doesn't start hitting into the 20s, and wind actually turns to west or southwest, you could come on again. But if I was to take a stab at it, I would say there's only a week left.
And even looking at the weather for the next few days today, look, it's but they're talking 23 at the weekend.
Yeah, they are.
It doesn't bode well for if we're heading down. It does not.
But we'll let you know next week how it got on.
Yeah, exactly.
He says, bundle full of anticipation.
Yeah. Where's the nearest pub?
Yeah, look, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. But there's over 100 anglers out in it. It's the ITFFA National. Been on the go since the 30s. Been held every year since the 30s. So, look. See how it goes.
And then actually, just on that, visiting anglers, are numbers still holding up? Like, it's kind of the same kind of crowds, same crew that come back?
Yeah, they are. Same crew coming back. What you find here, it's very, you know, it just goes to show how small a community the angling community is. Once the hatch petered off here, you'd still have the people who were booked to come and everything, but you didn't have the extras. And you see, you have... what should we say, the floating angler, right? And he could have heard that whoever could have heard that Sheelan was fishing well. So suddenly you wouldn't see the lake here is crowded, and you might see, like I've heard on Sheelan, there's been up over 200 boats on it certain days. Wow. Yeah. So, and that's what happens. And word gets out with mobile phones these days, and that's what happens. And, you know, suddenly if this place picked up again, suddenly you'd see more boats coming on again, and that's what it has. But yeah, the visiting anglers have held up well enough. But pubs and restaurants are still full of fishing talk in the evening.
Speaking of difficult fishing, we're going to be hearing about the Moy and the spring run from Garrett now. I suppose we want to do this episode. Obviously, it's a good time in terms of the grouse run to be starting soon. You do start to see the kind of numbers of fish starting to pick up. And as Garrett, who guides on the river, Plastic Angler, he's going to give us some kind of insights and overview of the river in this time of year.
Yeah, it's interesting. And when we're talking to him there, it's funny. And he said, "Out." And it seems to be happening all over the country. How the runs have become later and later, and like we see it here. I mean, like you talked about, and I'm going back to here, but I'll stop after this. But the party of the Tunbridge Wells guys that come here for 30 years, always the same week in May, and in the 90s, I think 3 years on the trot, they caught grilts every week when they were here. And in so much so, I think it was always on a Thursday. So they used to call Thursday the grills day. And we used to see more. So what I'm saying is we would have a run of grills here in May. We don't see that at all now. It's gone further back. And there, it seems to be the same story all over the country.
Aside from the Moy, there's some great insights from Garrett. He's a man who's fly fishing has been his life. Fishing has been his life. I know you had to go early, but his most memorable fish on the fly story was fantastic.
Oh, great.
Yeah. You should have a listen, Tom. Have a listen to the podcast.
I must listen to that podcast.
Tell your friends about it.
Yeah, so I did have to leave early last night. But
I only joined later, so.
it was well, actually, in my defense, I had to go fishing. Right. So anyway, that was it. But anyway, back to the Moy and Garrett. I first asked Garrett about his involvement with the East Mayo Anglers Association.
I'm living here close to Foxford, and I have a very, very strong affiliation with a number of fisheries, but particularly with East Mayo. I've been fishing East Mayo for years. I'm a committee member of East Mayo. And it's just it's a club that's very, very close to me. It's a strong club. It's a progressive club. Every club in the country would be a lot better if it was a bit more like it. I fished the water quite a bit. I've made a lot of good friends with other committee members. It's a club I'm proud to be part of, for the truth be known.
Grand. And come here, are you based up there now? Where are you based?
Yep. I up sticks. I left Dublin. My wife and I, we left Dublin about 5 years ago. Wow. Got a nice house here at the base of the Ox Mountains. We're between Foxford and Ballina. And getting a little bit more Western every day.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, I've got to let people know, in previous lives, myself and Garrett once dealt as a rep I was working with Hardy's at the time. I remember he used to have to go and meet you, but that's long past now.
That's back in the North County Dublin days. That's when I was in Portlaoise Trout Fishery.
That's right,
We're going back, that's 12, 14 years now. The Lake Cortlock Fishery wrapped up there 6-7 years ago. Great years. God. Great years, Tom. I tell you, the chap who owns the facility, Bill, offered me the opportunity to develop and bring it on. A lot of sweat, a lot of hardship went into it. A lot of fun years. It was great developing it from a hole in the ground to a very, very prolific fishery. Then unfortunately, we sprung a leak. The water ran That's away, right. and it just wasn't viable to bring it back to the fishery as it was. But they were great years. It was great. Very formative years. I learned a lot in that. I learned a lot about fishery management, dealing with anglers. Oh, I learned an awful lot. Not all that I can repeat here on that too.
Ah, yeah, we wouldn't worry about that. But no, it was a great spot, and I used to love calling into you. So you've upstick, and now you're on you're more or less, the Moy is your local water, yeah?
Yeah, well, everything around Mayo, you know, the Moy is my local water. I was on the Moy at 5 o'clock this morning. I'm only 3 miles from the river. I do a reasonable amount of guiding on the Moy. I'll also travel to the Spate Streams, the Owen Moor, the Owen Duff, Glenamoy later in the year, Carramore Lake when conditions are right for it. I'm more a salmon man. Like I'm handy on trout, but I'm better on the salmon.
But to be honest with you, that's kind of really coming across there with all the places. With all the places you said, you're concentrating on the salmon big time. So, do you have any favorite amongst those? Would it be the Moy because it's local, or state rivers, or
depends on the time of the day. Depends where the fish are running. Depends where the fish are pulling. Of those that I've mentioned, Shillings Pool on the Owen Moor when it's about 0.4 on the gauge, the spate dropping off when the midgets aren't there to eat you. And the fish are running. That's just bliss. I'm just back from guiding on Delphi last week. the Wynn Pool on Delphi, you just don't get much more pretty. They're on your doorstep, not far off Connemara. Yeah. Well, it was a hard week last week. We'd no water. Conditions were tough, but you don't mind fishing in a place with that kind of beauty. With fish in the pools in front of you. And we were seeing fish in the pools, but the crystal clear water and the bright sunlight just made it hard going. But it's encouraging to see fish in the system.
Actually, yeah, once you said that, would that be one of the clearest rivers you'd fish for salmon on the West Coast?
Yeah, it would, because even in Delphi, the water's so clear, visitors over the years, they've developed a technique of actually nymphing for salmon, sight fishing. Nymphing for salmon, which would be relatively unheard of in this country. Everything is nearly always across and down, sink tips, let it swing, feed them a loop of line and pull, but sight fishing. But one day there, last week, the clouds all blew away. The chaps I was with said, oh, that's it. We may get the golf clubs. And said, no, we're going to try something new. We brought them up to the turn pool. Deep hole, could be 12 or 15 foot of water, with a pair of Polaroids. And when the sun does come out, it gives you this chance to spot for them. And you'll see these lumps of springer sitting there in the pool. Bit of delicate casting. Don't spook them. A little bit of finesse. Takes a bit of technique. Just dropping it in front of them. You'll see the flash of the white mouth opening. Unfortunately, last week it opened and closed and he just nudged and turned away and let it pass. But we got his attention. But then other times you're watching your nymph and you might put a little color indicator on it, a little red tag and varnish on it or something. You're looking for the white mouth. Momentarily, you see the red tag on it. The red tag vanishes. Lift. Boom. And then the fireworks start. It's unorthodox. But it's about adaptation. Clear water, low water, you do what you have to do.
Would that make you think, though, and I have heard of lads doing a bit more nymphing for salmon, but like, I mean, you would have done it there because naturally you can see the fish. Would it make you think that maybe in water that it wasn't so clear, you could nymph them anyway?
I first saw nymphing for salmon on the Ridge Pool nearly 20 years ago. A Spanish chap was over and he was using something similar to our pheasant, gold body pheasant tail nymph with a big gold bead head on it, but on steroids. And he was casting across and down and fishing a blind in the ridge, in low water, and he outfished the regular boys who were using their cascades and their willy guns.
But when you were looking at this guy, did you know what he was doing? Like, were you aware this guy is nymphing, or did you think, what the hell is this guy up to?
I knew he was nymphing, but I thought the poor devil hadn't a clue what he's at. I thought he was fishing for big trout. I thought he... Miguel, he may even be listening to this from Galicia, northern Spain. And this is how they fished their rivers back home. It was relatively quiet on the ridge at that time, low water, which for us was tough. But for him, his nymphing tactics came into its own. He adapted, brought his tactics from home, and we all learned a few new tricks off him. So there's always plan B, C, or D. Now, it's not something I practice a lot, but it's open. But it's as you said, there's always something there.
I was just about to start asking, but we kind of got sidetracked. So listen, the Moy, when do you reckon it's going to kick off? When are you normally looking? It's the end of May now. It's coming to the end of, should we say, my really busy season on the carb here. Trout season sort of goes into a bit of hibernation for during June, because unless a bit of the canis fishing in the morning, but in general, for most daytime anglers, a lot of them start thinking of switching to salmon. So what do you reckon? When will you be looking at in the Moy?
Right. With us, we, as nearly everyone will know here, there's two distinct runs of fish in Ireland. We have our springers. Some systems are fortunate enough to get them early. The Moy wouldn't get early springers. So most of the efforts for springer fishing on the Moy would be April and May. Then the grills used to peak. If you weren't at the peak of the grills run by mid-June, there's something wrong. But now it's got somewhat later. The grills run isn't really peaking until mid-July, more towards the end of July. So we should be in the thick of the spring run. April is gone. May is effectively gone. And the spring run just hasn't really come to what it should be.
What's it been like this year so far?
It's been mediocre, to say the least. And everyone I'm speaking with, I rang around a number of fishery managers in the last few days. I met with our mutual friend, Paddy McDonald, on the Moy yesterday. Yeah. He was out with clients. We were just chatting. Paddy's of the opinion the run is in the region of 25 to 30% of what it was last year at this time. It's a bit scary. Most fisheries, every fishery is down on where it was last year. We don't know if they're late. The optimists among us are hoping that they're late and they're going to come in a good big burst in the next few weeks. Others who have been watching trends over the last few years know that the spring run is diminishing. Remains to be seen. We're hoping for a good gross run. This year, so far, the spring run has not been what it should be.
How have you done?
Okay, I'm going to book the trend on this. I've had an odd season. I've only been out fishing 3 days this year. I'll tell you about that in a minute. But I fished 3 days and I had a springer each day on the fly.
What?
Yeah, I know. It's a lotto ticket stuff. I was out 2 weeks ago. I had a 9-pound springer on East Mayo. A couple of days ago, I had a 12-pound springer on the Moy fishery. And this morning, I had a 9-pound fish on the Moy fishery. All on the fly, all released. The gods are looking out for me. I put that down to the karma of putting your fish back. The fish gods give you more fish if you kill less of them.
Right, yeah.
Science might tell you that too. If we stop killing them and let them get to the breeding grounds, there'll be more of them to come back.
Yeah.
Well, we're not going to preach into a catch. I'm not going to get into a preachy catch and release. But on the same note, we have to be more mindful and have to kill less of the brood stock. Those that have made it back, those that made it by the trawlers, those that have made it by the illegal netting, those that have gone through all the odds to go to the North Atlantic and back, we have to give them the last chance. We can't scream about the super trawlers taking anything if we ourselves aren't being that bit more responsible. It's very fortunate. I've three landed on the fly for three trips, the hat trick. My buddy Paul Kelly put the kibosh on me. He was saying, Gareth, you've two for two. Wouldn't it be great if you went out today and you got another one to make your hat trick? So, Mr. Kelly, if you haven't heard, a third one is for you.
Oh, well, that is absolutely fantastic. Do you know what you should do now? You should get your rod, put it back in the sleeve, back in the tube, take the reel and put the reel aside.
I might even frame them and hang them on the wall. No,
it's
a funny season for me, Tom. I didn't get going until late this year. I had a bit of bad health. And I just want to give a shout out to the team who helped me, actually, Professor Thomas Lynch. A Galway man, a fly fisherman, he fishes Aina a lot. Himself and his team helped me through a tough cancer diagnosis. And I'm shamelessly going to use your platform here, lads, because we're targeting men of all ages. Lads, just go out there, keep an eye on your prostates. I turned 50 early this year. A very vigilant GP sent me for a full scan. And as a result of the full scan, they found that I had an aggressive prostate cancer going. Early intervention was key. As I said, my GP and my surgeon, Prof Lynch, really got me out of a lot of trouble. Asymptomatic. So lads, men out there, keep an eye on your prostate. It's just a regular blood scan. When you're next to your GP, just ask for a PSA scan. It may get you out of a lot of trouble. I was just fortunate. Coincided with my 50th and the GP sent me for a full scan. Thanks, medical team. You've kept me out here. I'll be annoying you for a few more years and chasing more silver fellas.
No, to be honest with you, there's no problem at all about you highlighting that. That's very important. Really is important, Gareth. And actually, to be honest with you, I have my own dealings with having friends with prostate cancer. And and we have a lot of men of certain age listening here. So what Gareth is saying there, even though it's nothing to do with the fishing, but it's well worth highlighting because we can't be vigilant enough. And listen, glad to hear that you're in good form and that you're going to be chasing after the silver boys all the time. That's really good. So obviously that hindered your fishing then, yeah?
It did, yeah. After radical surgery, waiting is just not going to be happening. You know, I just had to mind myself. So my guiding didn't really kick off until about a month ago. My own fishing only kicked off in the last 2 weeks. But it gave me plenty of time to... I was out. I was on the river. I was out. I was on boats. I was out doing stuff, but I just wasn't as active as I could be partaking in it. But touch with all of the boys, keeping my finger on the pulse.
Yeah, no. That's well understood. But you're back in the swing of things and you've got out 3 days, right? 3 days and three spring salmon. So, I mean, that can't be bettered, really.
No, but I go for 4 for 4 next time.
Yeah, you're
on the pool today. we noticed the grilse are starting to make an appearance. We had high tide about 10 o'clock this morning, and there was a marked difference after the tide. There was another body of fish, and that a pod of grilse came in, and they're hanging around the pools. No great take on them, but it's good to see their numbers starting to build.
No, just a matter of interest there. I speak as a trout angler now. How did you know the grilse came in? Did they start showing or pitching?
They were showing. Your springers, yeah. Your springers will occasionally show, but springers tend to hold deeper. They're a bigger right. fish. They're conserving their yeah. energy. They're not as showy. Grilse are a little bit more slappy. Grilse, they'll pitch more. They'll show more. They'll head and tail. They'll dolphin pitch. And it was quite apparent. You know, it's when you're seeing your springer shown, you're just seeing the dorsal coming up and the adipose, the tail. You know, it's quite evident by looking at them, the gap between the fins mm-hmm. and the tail, that it's a decent lump of the fish. But the grilse, to make his presence known, he has to make more of an effort, and they'll be doing the slappy and showy, and only fresh in from the sea, they're trying to shake the lice, so they're slapping and banging off the surface, and you get a good look at them.
Yeah, with what you're saying there, so you'll be hopeful all the same, though, that really looking at this now, that hopefully you should be having a bit of grilse fishing sometime in June.
Yeah.
Over the
yeah,
next couple of weeks.
I say in the next couple of days when those fish come in and they settle. I said the lads should be getting sports on them by the weekend. For the lower Moy fisheries, conditions are looking very, very good. There were a couple of fish hit on the Cathedral Beat today that hadn't fished up until yesterday. I think the first fish of the year was caught on the Cathedral yesterday. There was another one landed today. The lower Moy Beats, Moy Fishery, the Ridge, the Cathedral, Pulna Monarch, Spring Wells, the lower Beats only come into their own in low water. It just hit the fly only mark today. So there's no worming or spinning allowed on the ridge from now. So it's just coming perfect for fly. So just
and
good
is
to see
there
you
is pick. There a marker on the gauge? What level is it on the gauge for it to be fly only?
Not quite gauge. It's more rudimentary than that.
Right,
It's stylishly rudimentary in that there's a cut stone and a line engraved across it, written above it, when the fly only. So when the water level is below the line, it's simply fly only. When the line is covered by the water, it's spin and worm, all methods except prawn and shrimp.
That's fantastic.
But, as you know, there's a lot of international visitors come to the Moy. It doesn't have to be too graphic. Nothing will be lost in translation. Simply, if the line is visible, it's fly only. If the line is gone, work away with legal methods.
Okay, so if the water is at that level, will the grilse run move up into the other waters? Or what happens there? Now, I'm asking this because I've actually, and we've discussed this on the show, Darren, myself before, I've yet to fish the Moy, but I'm a trout man through and through. So, but I often hear that sometimes, you know, the fish haven't gone up through the system. So at the moment, at the water height that it's at now, can they run?
Oh, absolutely. 100%. Yeah. It's the nature of rivers. Rivers change every year. You get winter floods, you get big pushes of water. Conditions underfoot change, courses change. In the last 10 years, I had a quick chat with Paddy Bonner today in Ballina Angling Centre. And we were just talking how the ridge pool has changed so much. 10 years ago, you had to be on top of your game to be able to fish it well, because the main channel was at the far side, opposite to where the anglers were standing. So you really had to be punching a full line even to get to the fish. Now the flow has shifted, the flow is down the middle. So it's a lot more forgiving for your average angler, so at least everyone can get the run of it. But I digress on that. Since there was a couple of infrastructure projects built just above the ridge pool, a new pedestrian bridge went in about 10 years ago. So to they had to build up coffer dams, divert the flow to put in the foundations. So as a result of it, there are deeper gouged runs that have never really filled in since the construction. So even in the lowest of water, there is a big push of pressure, full water for any amount of fish to run up through.
Wow.
About 7-8 years ago, about 2018, I think, was a very, very, very dry May. River's nearly too low for fishing, and I simply went walking. It's a great way. I did it in East Mayo in particular. I'd never seen the river as low, and it was a great way to identify hollows, humps, rocks, which are all going to be potential lies when there's 2 foot of water on that. I learned a lot. I saw holes. Well, some of the holes that I had walked into before, not knowing there were holes, and got a donking. but you find rocks, you see hollows. You only imagine when you put 2 foot of water, you know what it's going to come to. But even then, there were sea-lice fish being caught up around Foxford, mainly by chaps who were prawning. But even then, in the lowest of the low, the fish were still able to run. Sea-lice fish, you know, that's telling you, long-tail sea-lice in them, they couldn't be in the system for any more than 36 hours, the fact that the long-tail lice were still on them. So the fish can run the whole time. Yep, the pressure of water is there. It changes. Pools change. Every year, you nearly have to go out and relearn some parts of them. Flows change. And that's the great part of it. You take nothing for granted. There could be a different flow, different push, different hole. It's great. And that's why there's a bit of a living for us guides still there. Someone could come one year and they think they know the flow, they come back the next year and they don't always know it all. We do have our uses.
That's really fantastic. I never thought of that, but it actually makes a whole lot of sense. You know, I mean, rivers are kind of organic and always changing. I mean, like, I'm just thinking now here with me, the lake is always the same. But the only thing is we have other things, but that adds a whole new dimension. And yeah, does mean that you're kind of wanted. But Garrett, like, if the rivers change and you know them, like, for example, now you've fished abroad a lot of places. So like that can actually happen to you. If you go to rivers and travel there that you've been to before and they've changed. Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah. I've been fortunate enough that as a fishing guide, I've been very fortunate to travel to some very nice places with clients and friends of mine, particularly Iceland. You're saying rivers change, and in Iceland you can visibly see it because you're fishing crystal gin clear water. It's not as big an issue in Iceland because you can see the bottom and you can see the fish.
Right.
It was an eye-opener to me on one of the canyon pools, I think, on the Sela River. I was there with one of the local guys, and he was saying, Garrett, will you go up and spot? So I went up on the height, watching down. This guy's fishing a collie dog on the surface. It was kind of skating it. And I said, there's a big fish. He's about 3 foot beneath it. He's coming up. What I thought was 3 foot was about 22 foot. The pools are about 22, 25 foot deep. What I thought was a grilse at 2 foot depth was a 15 pounder at 22 foot depth. He saw this little fly, half an inch fly, skating over his head. And he came up and he hammered it. So when you're abroad and you're sight fishing, different, it's a little bit easier when you can see the fish and you can see the bottom and you can read it. As always, a bit of local knowledge. When I am working on systems abroad, you befriend the local boys. You get out for a walk with them. You buy the local boys' beer, you know, because you're there on their turf. Likewise, when there's other guys over here, you return the professional favor.
So, yeah. So if somebody's buying you a beer in Geary's, then you know what? You'll just be, you know, that's both ways.
A bit of professional courtesy, you know, a bit of professional courtesy.
Yeah.
And Garrett, tell us, you fished all around. Was it holidays, professional? Tell me, what was the...
Well, through my work as an instructor and guide, I built up a really nice little black book of people who employ me for my services as an instructor, as a guide, and some of them who have become good friends. So a number of them, they have got used to my services here in Ireland with them. And then as they've developed in their fishing career, they will travel to, they'll broaden the horizons and go to foreign locations. And they like to have me along with them. So it'd be something like a fishing concierge. They may have guests along on the trip with them who may be quite novice. They'll have their children along on the trip and they know they're in safe hands with me. You know, I'm tried and trusted. They know what they're getting with me. We have a good rapport. So generally, yeah, I get to go to nice places, you know, close to the home, England, Scotland. I've been fortunate to get to 5 different systems in Iceland, 7 or 8 different systems in Alaska. Jewel in the Crown must have been saltwater game fishing, fly saltwater game fishing in the Seychelles that's giant trevally. If you get a chance to go for GTs on the fly, these things, I'm experienced. I've caught a lot of fish, but the first one of these I hooked, he took 350 yards of backing, gone. This is a 12 weight, single-handed, 9 foot, 12 weight, single-handed rod. A Hardy Fortuna reel with the clutch closed. You cannot take line off this. These things hit it. And it's like tying your fly to the back of a Range Rover. Range Rover flooring it. And you're just, no, you're not going to stop till he wants to stop. I was just there gobsmacked looking at him. And the local guy was saying, you're going to stop that thing. It's going to be in Somalia if you don't stop this thing.
What kind of size is it, Gert, you're talking?
This is my lucky streak again, Dara. The first GT that I ever saw and that I cast it to was a specimen GT of 115 centimetres. Came in around, didn't weigh him, but by the charts, that's probably around 75, 80 pound weight. And they're just pure muscle, pure anger, pure speed. The ultimate game fish. These boys are angry. These things are great.
Are they the pinnacle? Like you'd say, like if you want to experience fight on the fly, pure strength, like brute strength.
For fly fishing that we know, you know, you can go after the marlin or the sailfish, but you're really only trawling behind the boat with teasers and drawing them in. But this is where you're on a skiff, you're with your Polaroids, you're sight fishing these, you see them coming, the guide will call, GT, 12 o'clock, 150 meters, coming your way, watch tier 11. You'll call it, you'll see it, you read the speed, pop it out in front of him, strip, try get his attention. Then if he turns, you cannot strike these things hard enough. We're talking about a strip strike. We're putting welly into it. You're doing everything. They've mouths on them like porcelain. And then when they finally realize they're hooked, boom. Ultimate. You asking me, are they the ultimate? Guys, any of you out there on the podcast listening now, you're not seeing me. I'm bouncing here in the seat. I'm animated as hell. These things, these get you going. If any of you get the opportunity, GTs, and it's not just GTs out there, there's everything. There's blue trevallies, wahoo, barracudas, bonefish averaging 5-6 pound weight, and no problem to catch 10, 15 of those bones a day. Permit, there's everything has a challenge.
This is all Seychelles, Gert, is it?
This was, a couple of atolls off the Seychelles, yeah. A buddy of mine, Peter Rippon, he's been overfishing here with us in Ireland a number of times. He sets it up. It's bucket list stuff, lads. It's bucket list. But if you're going to treat yourself, that's something to be looking at.
Can I just add in now for those of you, because it still is only audio, Garrett actually has stopped bouncing now. And he's just come down. He actually genuinely has stopped. He was bouncing. He was really bouncing.
Reliving the fight.
I'm down. I was even double holding here, everyone.
You were casting. You actually did strip strike as well.
Oh, deadly.
Well, it was strip striking for a GT.
Of course.
Actually, Alaska. That's on my bucket list, Garrett. There was a couple of lads actually when I was fishing with them before, and German lads, and they do it every year. Fly in from Frankfurt into Anchorage. And there's even on Facebook, I believe there's a whole German fly fishing community that go to Alaska fly fishing, and they get flown up river, however far, and they raft for 2 weeks back downstream. Uh-huh. And they stop when they want to, you know, get food, when they want to tent up, and they just do this for 2 weeks at their own leisure. It sounded incredible. That wilderness life.
What you're describing there is a wilderness float trip. And there's a couple of guys, they work out Bristol Bay area is great for that. Generally what you'd do, you'd go in, you'd meet your outfitter, set up at your, depends how many of you are going. So if there's 60, you'd be needing three men, two rafts, and then one for the gear. Planning prep is everything on this, because invariably what they'll do, they'll drop you out to the headwaters. We did some of this on the northern fork of the Good News River in Bristol Bay. We also did something similar to it in the Wood River in Tikchik. Really, planning is everything. He'll drop you in. You inflate the rafts. He'll give you a geo-coordinate where he'll meet you in 7 days' time, 10 days' time, whatever, and it's up to you to be there.
Yeah.
You'll have a satellite phone, which only has limited battery. That's your get out of jail. It's wise to pack a Magnum 44 or something. No one wants to shoot a bear. No one really wants to be eaten by a bear either. We've never had any issues with bears. You let them hear that you hear you're
exactly,
coming.
Yeah.
They're great. You see them. Like, they're a novelty. They are a great novelty, but you bear in mind they're about 10 times bigger and heavier than we are. You give them the right of way. You keep out of their way. But as you're saying, flow trips are amazing. And as you come down through the rivers, you meet all the different species. You know, primarily on most of your Alaskan rivers, some will have steelhead. Nearly all of them will have different strains of salmon. Depending on the time of the year, early in the year, you'll have your kings, then you'll have your sockeyes and your chums. Every second year, you'll have your pinks. And then at the end of the year, you have your silvers. Your silvers would be the one that would be most similar to our own Atlantic salmon. Very, very similar in style, shape, fish for them the same way. But as you're working your way down through the river systems, you're going to meet everything. You may steelheads, Dolly Vardens, rainbows, chars. The closer you come to the estuary, the more likely you'll be hitting the fresh salmon and the sea runs. Do it, Darth. Do it.
You know, it's another bucket list, Gar.
You know, it's what you're speaking about, the wilderness trip. That's really where you need to go. Unfortunately, everywhere is becoming a victim of its own success and its own popularity. What we're doing now, broadcasting it, making everyone aware of it, and in the best of ways, because everyone should have the opportunity to enjoy it. But places that were off the beaten track are not so quite off the beaten track.
Like, yeah, they're getting harder to find, aren't they? Unless you've got a lot of money, kind of.
Yeah. Like, you know, one of the main systems in Alaska would be the Kenai River, which is only 2 hours' drive from Anchorage. Still fantastic fishing. But this is where you see those iconic pictures of 20 lads shoulder to shoulder combat fishing when the sockeyes are running. Like, dear, could you be bothered? Like, you know,
you wouldn't want to fly halfway around the world, you know, experience that. Like, not for me. Like, but then, can you tell me, you've fished in Scotland. Talk to me a bit about the Scottish salmon fishing, because it's kind of doom and gloom, a bit like Ireland in the sense of runs are gone.
It's getting hard. It's getting hard. Like, following social media in the last week or two, they said the spring run to Spey has effectively collapsed. Although I just got good news, good buddy of ours, Jim Wilson, had a nice fish on the junction pool on the Tweed today, kind of bucking the trend of Scottish salmon. It's hard. I did a nice trip at the end of season last year with a buddy of mine, Paul Kelly. We went to the Findhorn up in Invernessshire. First 2 days, nothing. The last day we were there was the last day of the season. Overnight, the river came up 4 foot. We were there on the day that everyone says you should have been there when you weren't there. And we finished out our season with a bowl of fish. And a lot of them were fresh. It just came up on the last flood. I was fishing on the Dee last year, Royal Dee Park on Dee, one of the prime beats. We had a number of days on it. Prime time, around this time of year for springers. We fished it hard. The chap I was with, an excellent angler. We never saw a tail for the 3 or 4 days we were there. It was, it makes us wonder. It makes us wonder. There is something awful afoot. I'm not a scientist. I'm a guide. I'm an instructor. I'm a man on the ground, but there's something awfully wrong. As I said, I was speaking with Paddy McDonnell yesterday. Paddy's of the opinion of this year, the run is reduced to about 25 or 30% of what it was this time last year. That's a trend that has been reproducing itself, unfortunately, for far too many years. It's in steady decline, steady decline, steady decline. And I haven't seen a blip upwards. One year, 2020, when everything was shut down for COVID.
Yeah.
I'd moved to Mayo a couple of years beforehand. Unfortunately, the Ridge Pool was within my 15-kilometer limit of travel at the time. We had great sport.
I was going to say, what was that like to be able to fish it?
It was like turning the clock back 30 years. Like, we were experimenting. I was catching them on the riffling hitch in the Ridge Pool. Skating tubes. They have a rule there, once you land five fish, you have to step out, even if all five are returned. I was seeing fish boiling and I was pulling it away from them. So you wouldn't be catching your limit. I'm not into my COVID conspiracy theories, but there was something very, very, very different that year. I've been speaking with a lot of fishery managers and professionals in the last week, just getting their opinion on seeing how their fisheries are going for them. And most are down. Speaking with Dave McAvoy in Delphi, their numbers are relatively constant to last year. There are two fish down from where they were this time last year. That's That's very good.
Doesn't that raise the whole hatchery debate then, isn't it, Garrett? Like,
absolutely.
And yeah, that's a whole other can of worms. We're going to do a podcast on it later in the summer. Because in fairness, I've had people contact us, say, well, you know, there's another side to the hatchery. You know, like, I don't know enough of the science behind it. And that's why I do want to discuss it later on in the year. But from what I can see is if the fish ain't coming in, or, you know, you wanted, basically, when we covered the Cara
with Mike
O'Shea. Mm-hmm. And, you know, his take on it as well, if you do it when it's too late, well, then it's kind of no good. But if you can do it to help along, you know, with the existing kind of stock.
It's contentious. The scientists don't like it. But sometimes people in life have to do what they don't like. If we have a chance now to retain the genetic strains of every river in the country, we can help save a lot of these systems before it goes beyond a critical mass. I think people have to start considering options along that way. It's not coincidental that Delphi, one of the prime hatchery-based systems. I was over there last week with a group of friends and clients helping them. Conditions were tough. Like, it was bright sunlight, low water, but we were seeing fish in pools. Finlock that the fish run into, there were fish bouncing around it. We didn't catch anything, but we stirred a few, we bounced a few, but at least we knew there were fish in the system. One of the river systems I'm going to Iceland this year. It's my first time going to it. It's the East Ranga. It was a dead river. It was a volcanic eruption in the area in the 60s. It was a great river for salmon. But now there'll permanently be a layer of fine silt on the bottom of the river. So there's no gravel for the spawn and the eggs to hold. So they have developed a hatchery system on it. And 2 years ago, it returned the highest catch rate of all rivers in Iceland. To the extent the chap who owns the fishing on it, Peter, a friend of mine, he said it was embarrassed. He was embarrassed that the catch rates were actually so high. He said people aren't supposed to be catching this amount of salmon in a day. And the beauty of it is you can retain your fish from the hatchery system. So for those who do like eating wild salmon, yeah, we all love eating wild salmon. I love eating wild salmon, but I've been fortunate enough to catch three this year. On my conscience, I can't kill them. They've all gone back. I had a nice 12-pound hen 2 days ago, and I just looked at her and I saw 20,000 eggs. Rather than 12 steaks in my freezer, 20,000 eggs, hopefully on the spawning reds next year. We can all sit back and moan and groan about all the super trawlers are taking all the salmon. But if the few that do get by the super trawlers or whatever people like to blame, if we're taking the last of the broodstock and pulling them out, like we are equally responsible for their demise. I'm not saying people don't have to go fully catch and release. People, if it's in an area that's sustainable, yes, people may retain a fish, but the mentality of killing every fish has to be gone away from. The Moy, unfortunately, suffers from that.
Yeah, tell me, why is that? Is it because it's still a lot of local clubs, local anglers, that they've always done it, so that therefore, why should they change? Oh,
not just locals. But, you know, I've met chaps down there who, and through conversation, they might have been fishing there last September, well, before the embargo on Russia came. They'd be fishing to Karklova, they'd be fishing to Panoy, paying 20,000 euro a week to fish there. Not permitted to kill a fish and happily pay 20,000 and put everything back. But then they'll come over to here to the Moy, want to give out about paying 50 euro for a day ticket and wanting to tap everything on the head. It's just because it's been permissible here for so long. It's been acceptable here for so long. But maybe because the Moy always had a huge surplus.
Yeah,
but that surplus is greatly diminished now. The mindset has to change as quickly as the numbers are diminishing, or else we're gonna have ourselves in trouble a lot quicker than we desire it to be.
Great. Talk to me then, Gert, just about the rest of the season. If we see any upswing or any hope in terms of kind of the grills run, when do you start to see the real numbers kind of pick up in terms of fish being caught? Like, is it the next few weeks?
We still have more pods of springers yet to come in that'll run with the early running grills. We're keeping our fingers crossed. But the numbers of springers caught thus far on the Moy system are very disappointing, and more than disappointing, they're worrying.
And do you get, because I know in the Blackwater ride fish, they get like June fish, which are kind of the late springers do you get something like that?
We do up this way. They have a name in them. They call them the Blackbacks.
What are the black?
The black backs. Yeah, I don't know if it's a Mayo thing or a Moy thing, but they're a fish that they generally average into, I don't know if the same strain you down with you, they'd average generally be 5, 6, 7 pound fish, where your main multi, your early springers would be kind of your 9, 10s, 11s. Then up here, we get a strain of black backs, kind of 5, 6 pounders. Then the very early growths here on the Moy can be very small. They can be 2 pounders. And then as we go into July day, we tend to get the beefier lads, the 4 and the odd 5 pound. The days of the 5 pound growths, 6 pound growths, they're gone. You know, good growths now is 4. That's just, we had a reasonably good, we had a fairly steady, solid growth year last year on the Moy. And that's why we thought our spring run would be good this year. Because, as you know, the extra year cycle, last year's growth should be the same run as smolt should effectively be this year's springers. Something has happened. We don't know if something happened. Well, come here, it's not just a Moy. It's everywhere.
No, it's true. It's
everywhere.
It's very true. And are you, so is July the thick of it then for the Moy?
Yeah. 20, 30 years ago, the peak of the grill swan run was always what they call St. John's Day, the 23rd of June down here, bonfire night. Like they're saying when the bonfires are burning, the grills are at their peak. It's shifted now. It's probably about 15th to the 20th of July now is when it seems to peak. I don't know, just trends. Possibly they're saying because the fish have to travel further north chasing their food stuff when they're at sea. Takes them longer to get there, longer to get back. They've changed their programming, their timing. But just the fact of the matter with us, yeah, mid-July is prime time. August is a little bit of a dog month. And this autumn run is just not, gone. It's gone. Yeah, I was trying to find a polite word. I was trying to find something comforting. No, but it's gone. Yeah, we're just hoping for a few late grills, more so than anything.
You're involved with the East Mayo Anglers as well.
Yeah, great strong
and
club.
I suppose you mentioned the Ridge Pool, and obviously that's the iconic, you know, people that even
yeah, because that's where
Ireland.
We are at the moment. It's low water. Mayo, it's the water is just a little bit too low for East Mayo for the last 2 weeks. For fly on East Mayo, the gauge at Ballylahan Bridge, I prefer it once it's between 0.6 and 0.9 on the gauge. For the last couple of weeks, it's knocking around 0.4. It's just a little bit low. We've 9 miles of water on East Mayo, 94 named pools. Most of them, you could fly fish, three quarters of them. Unfortunately, in the 60s, a lot of the River Moy was arterially drained. It left some stretches of it canal-like. But the club, with Central Fisheries Board at the time and the OPW, they converted a lot of the stagnant water back to good fly fishing streams by putting in croys and groins that made good fly water. So now we've a designated stretch of 2 miles that is strictly fly only. It's good water. But I like anything, you know, you need a bit of a push on it for it to work the flies effectively. But East Mayo, to their credit, very strong club, 2 full-time professional water keepers, professional administrator, Kathleen, she keeps it running like clockwork. Very strong committee, conservation-based youth programs, catch and release competitions, Swinford 250 Cup. It's strong. It's great. It's great to see a club actually giving back and being proactive. So if every other club in the country was as strong, we'd be in a better place.
Do you get a lot of visiting anglers come to the East Mayo waters?
Yeah, on East Mayo we do. We get a good number of visiting anglers. It's very popular with French and Germans in particular. We'd very, very strong link with French and German anglers. French anglers, they would normally start around mid-May, generally to coincide with the peak of the spring run. Good to have a bit of international flair around. A lot of French people have settled in the area. Fishing brought them to the area and they ended up coming here and making livings out of it, making their living. Good number of Germans. Met a couple of nice German guys today. We're doing a lot of talking. The fishing's tough at the minute, so we're doing a lot of international relations.
I always get, and again, I haven't fished the Ridge Pool, but I get that sense of that the real camaraderie, that kind of, you know, people on the fishing there, people watching, you know, you're in, you're out, you're watching people landing fish. it's a totally different kind of atmosphere to kind of maybe what people are normally used to in terms of, you know, fly fishing the river. Like,
yeah, it's a strange one. It's a love hate thing. You'll either love it or hate it. I brought people there, and some say, oh, it's great, the camaraderie. Others are saying, oh, it's a bit like being in a fishbowl. Everyone's watching what you do. It depends if you're introverted, if you're extroverted, if you like mixing and mingling, if you're confident, if you're casting well and it's all going well, it's a great place to be. If you're not casting too well and you're getting wrapped around your neck and everything's going, you're having a bad day, there's nowhere to hide. But the beauty of it is you're at the head of the, you're the last part of the tidal. You know, generally the fish will run on the tide. It stops becoming brackish. It comes pure fresh water. You tend to hold there for that little bit to orientate, and it just gives you a little bit more of an opportunity to fish for them. As you know, it's one of the iconics. You know, it's like your Kerry Spill, your Galway Weird, Ridge Pool, you know, your Junction Beat on the Tweed. It's one of the big iconics, and it's nearly always Irish fly fishers. It's nearly always a badge of honour. Or a coming of age to get to fish it, and then to catch your fish on it, and then into Doherty's Bar on Bull Buoy for your pint afterwards, and trading stories. You know, that's part of the whole fishing experience. You know, it's not just catching. And even now, it's just meeting new friends, making new contacts. It's a big part of it. If it's all about catching fish, we need to find a new hobby.
If you were forced, you had only one part of the Moy to fish, where would it be?
East Mayo. Ridge Pool is great, but it's 500 metres of one big long stretch. East Mayo, you have 9 miles of water. As I said, 94 named pools. All fish differently at different heights of water. All have their distinct lies, distinct runs. Five people out. I can choose. I'm fortunate enough. I live 3 miles away from the River Moy. I can choose when I want to go out, when conditions are opportune. I have a client. He's coming over. Boom, his dates are set. If it's absolutely low water, I know the low water pools I can bring him to. If it's a stinking, well, not quite a stinking flood. If a stinking flood, we'll be off to the Spate Rivers. But on high water, on East Mayo, you have something at every height of water. You have something for every condition. If someone, they're not a fly man, if they prefer a spinning or they prefer a warming, ample water for that too. So that's why it works for groups. That's why the French groups come over. Maybe a group of five. Two or three of them might be fly fishers, other might be a spinner, other might be a warmer. They can all go to one fishery, they can stay together as a group. Also, we don't all start in the fly. You know, the fact people can worm or spin, it's a great opportunity for youngsters to start out on it. Every year we run at least one, sometimes two, youth developing days. Committee members, dedicated members, instructors, guides. We all come together, free day for members' children and any children in the locality. We'll do casting instruction. We'll do ecology. IFI will come up. They'll do kick samples. We'll run a barbecue for the day. Everything we can to get more youngsters onto the bank. You know, there's not enough coming in. Really not enough coming in.
Fishing, fly fishing has just dominated your life. The passion that you have for it, I can see it. It means everything in your life, isn't it? Like
I'm driven by it. I'm absolutely driven by it. I gave up a professional career. I was, at one stage, I was a quantity surveyor. And even while I was a quantity, before I was a quantity surveyor, I was a fly fisherman. I spent my summers, as soon as I could ride a bike, my cousin, Jason the Fish Richardson, was 3 years older than me, so he was deemed to be the responsible one. So we'd cycle 4 miles from Balbriggan down to the Delvin River that divides Dublin and Meath. And we would spend 11 hours there a day, 6 days a week. We wouldn't be there on Sundays because Mammy stated we had to be home to go to Mass on Sunday and to have a family dinner and to let people see that she did have a son and he wasn't shipped away. So, yeah, we got very much involved with another very strong club, Gormanson and District Anglers Club. We did from the river that moved on. We Wavan Pipe Makers, they had a 27-acre lake that they had dug out and were initially using as a coolant, provision of water for cooling their manufacturing system. Technology developed, they didn't need it to be water cooled, and they donated it to the club. So from an early age, I was involved with committees and development, and then the natural progression was I said I'm going to go off and become qualified as a fly casting instructor and guide. I did that just for my own
I wanted to, just because I loved it.
And I was working at that all the way through, even as I was a quantity surveyor. And then in 2007, 2008, the world ended construction-wise, recession-wise. And the option was either to go to Dubai or go to London or go to Hong Kong in construction. And my great wife, Erica, says, Garrett, you're great at what you do. Give it 3 years. If you can make it work, go for it. I'll back you. And developing Cortlock Fishery with Bill, brought it on to where it had its untimely end, an unfortunate leak, and that was the end of the fishery. Erica is self-employed, I'm self-employed. So we came west. It was a bit of a joke. I asked her, would she move west with me? She said, you might as well move west. That's where you're spending all your time. So she came with me. We found a lovely house. We're here in the Ox Mountains, 3 miles from Des Moines. It's in me. I love it.
I'll just take you back a little bit. What happened to Cortlock?
Sprung a leak. It was a man-made lake. And as it was built, there was a layer of gravel towards the bottom of it. Water started wicking underneath and started wicking underneath. Then it sprung a leak and all the water ran out. The owner of the property and myself, we sat down, we had a chat. By the time it all be brought back up, trout fisheries like that are not money makers. They are, if they wipe their face, that's about it. It's a passion of labor. But when a passion of labor is going to cost a ball of money to get it back, to just back to breaking even, it just wasn't going to be financially viable. So that it was Cortlock Trout Fishery, RIP, at that stage.
But in many ways, it was obviously the spur then to make you go west, you know.
Oh, yeah, that really was. Like, you know, I was gutted. I came in on a Monday morning, and I had two students that were coming in doing a week's work with me, a week's work placement in transition year. And I just looked at them and I said, what do you want us to do? And I said, find me 4 acres of water. Like, it was just gone. I just came in and it was just a hole in the ground. It was just, I can half laugh about it now, but at the time, it's something that you'd put 5-6 years of your life into. You'd brought, and it was really, really good fishery. It was really good. And it was just at the point where it was starting to make a few quid, but it just wasn't meant to be. But as you said, looking at it, it just gave me the spur, went west, and things, we went west for the best. It changed for the better.
Garrett, it's been absolutely brilliant talking to you. I love talking to people like yourself who are so passionate and driven and enthusiastic and live the life. You know, and that's what I love when I come across people like this, you know, guides, instructors, people like Tom and other people on the rivers and lakes around Ireland who just are driven by it, have a need for it, and make a life out of it. And do you know what? Everybody that I talk to is, they're so happy with the life that they have chosen to lead, which I think is a testament to the bravery. And, you know, I think so many of us would love to have to have been able to do it as well. But our last question for you, Garrett, as we ask all our guests every week, is, and you have plenty of stories and plenty of experiences, what was your most memorable fish on the fly?
I have two.
Okay.
Brilliant. One that I've already told you about, that big, yes, Audi A6 Range Rover, giant Trevally kind of thing, but you don't forget those. But the other one is back to 8-year-old Garrett in a competition with Gormanston and District Anglers. I was 8, very new to fly fishing, and there was 40 years ago, there was an inter-club competition on Loch Sheelan. All the clubs in Dublin and East Leinster would all converge on Sheelan for one day, and the two highest scores out of each club would go to fish the Leinsters. And I was brought along because I wouldn't have it any other way. I had to go. So I was plonked in the middle seat, two experienced anglers either side of me. And July day, not a puff of wind, bright sunlight, becalmed, nothing happening. These are pre-buzzer fishing. Like, normally you'd go buzzers and down, but it wasn't the case then. You were pulling wets or you're throwing ugly dries. Competition was to fish at six, to finish at 6, and up to 5:30, two boys in the boat with me, nothing. The boys were half asleep. I was effectively practicing my casting with a big old danky Diawek glass rod kind of thing. I had a sedge pattern on because the lads said to me around that time of year there could be sedge. True enough, there was a natural sedge 15 yards in front of me, and I was aiming, practicing. I was hitting this thing for about half an hour that we were so becalmed, there was distance wasn't even moving. Next thing, the natural sedge that I was aiming at wasn't there anymore. And there was a dimple. And I even though it was 8, I realized that they don't disappear. It was sucked down. So one opportunity. Aimed that I'd been aiming at for the last half hour, landed on the water. 4.25 pound of brown trout came up and took it. And the 8-year-old weighed the fish in and won the competition.
I don't believe
it. So that, it does not get much more memorable than that. I wasn't allowed to go to the Leinster's because there was a clause in it to fish the Leinster's. There was an age limit on it. But my proudest moment, I think the boys were going in for a few. There were the days they travel by minibuses and there'd be pints and everything on the way back. I was sick on Sidona by the time I got home that night. But that was the 8-year-old Gareth memorable fish.
That you don't have a picture of it by any chance, do you?
No, nothing. But it's emblazoned in here. I'll never forget it. You couldn't write it. You couldn't.
Well, there was no hope for you after that. Like it was.
Nope. But the 8-year-old to come in. When we got to the weigh-in, I know they were looking at me and they're saying, "Ah, they got the young lad to carry John McNally's fish." And I said, "What'd you get him on, Macker?" He got it. It was just class. It was super.
Oh, geez, that's a brilliant story. We haven't heard one like that now. Well done. Gareth, thank you very much for your time. And I know you were speaking to Tom earlier. And thank you for keeping me up to date in terms of kind of your stories, insights into the Moy. I think it's been absolutely brilliant. It's been so many of your experience that, you know, can tell it as it is, you know. But if you still love the sport, keep going out fishing. And we'll see how the rest of the season turns out. Tight lines for the rest of the season for yourself, Gareth.
Thank you. Enjoyed your chat, lads.
Our thanks to Gareth Rigrock for joining us on the show. And don't forget to rate, review, and follow the Ireland on the Fly podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Plus, you can keep up to date on IrelandOnTheFly.com as well as on Instagram. And myself and Tom will be back with another episode about the people and places of fly fishing in Ireland. Mayfly time is the pinnacle for most brown trout anglers, and we're pleased to announce our next Ireland on the Fly Masterclass is focusing on mayfly tactics with international angler, guide and renowned fly tyer Jackie Mann.
On Thursday the 25th of April at 8 p.m, Jackie will be discussing how to make the most of the conditions, the best flies and methods to use, as well as giving his tips and insights from a lifetime of experience.
So, to join us for this masterclass on Thursday, 25th of April, just go to www.irelandonthefly.com/masterclass. Tickets cost €10 and all attendees will get a copy of Jackie's notes as well as access to the recording of the webinar afterwards.
And stay tuned for our masterclasses throughout 2024, covering salmon, rivers, lochs, streamers, lures, dries, everything to make you a better salmon or trout fly angler, helping you to catch more this year and to learn from the best. For more information, email us on info@irelandonthefly.com.